Well,
I think I'm going to do cartwheels.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'll call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Tuesday, March 21st. I'm going to open a work session for the introduction of committee measures.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have three LCDs before you today. One is relating to voter registration. It comes at the request of the Oregon Student Association. We have two other relating to elections bills. Those are committee bills. We hope to use those as vehicles to deal with a couple of overlapping issues we have in this committee. One was around voters' pamphlets and timelines. We want to make sure we have the appropriate vehicle to use that for. And another one, we have various issues related to campaign finance and if we want to put them all in one bill. So those are true committee bills for us to use.
Right.
Madam Chair, I move LC 4233, LC 4326, and L3 4327 be introduced as committee measures.
Sound like you're calling bingo. Vice Chair Rayfield moves LC 4233, LC 4326, and LC 4327 be introduced as committee measures. Any discussion? Any objection? All right. LCs are introduced. I will close the work session. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2505.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2505 expands definition of independent expenditure to include aggregate expenses of $750 or more that refer to a clearly identified candidate, measure, or political party within 30 days of primary election or 60 days of general election. There are exemptions to that definition. Madam Chair.
All right, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from House District 13, and my co-sponsor, Senator Boquist, is with me. I'm going to speak first.
Ladies
Thank you.
First.
As Oregonians, we do pride ourselves in transparency, in disclosure in our political campaigns. We don't have limits on what candidates spend, but spending is reported. When I talk with constituents, they're very pleased about this. They're pleased about transparency, and they agree it's important, and they think all spending is reported. And then when I point out to them that it's not, they're disappointed. They're more than disappointed. They think it's wrong. They're surprised. Now more than ever, people around the country, including here in Oregon, are feeling a loss of faith in democracy because of the lack of transparency about money and politics. According to the Register Guard, Oregon's, quote, legislative campaigns are among the most expensive in the nation. For example, in 2014, Oregon ranked fourth out of 45 state house chambers with the highest average campaign contributions. States can't limit how much an individual or group can raise if the group isn't directly associated with a campaign, but states can require these groups to report where the money is going. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 47 states require groups or individuals to report where their money is spent, with the timing of the reports depending on the amount of money that's spent and the proximity or time to the election. Two states have an expanded definition, such as this bill proposes, and the third is enacting legislation this year. In a National Public Radio story about the Federal Elections Commission, one commissioner said, quote, "The actual extent of dark money is, of course, unknown because by its very nature, it's dark." And quoting again, 501c4s and c6s under the tax code that are supposed to be social welfare organizations still giving to campaigns, and continuing, quote, "We have had cases at the commission where 97% of the money spent by an organization is on political campaigns." That's at the federal level, but Oregon has, again in the words of the Register Guard now, quote, "some of the weakest safeguards against big money on the books." We can try to do better in Oregon. Our current laws don't require all individuals and organizations that run informational ads, post lawn signs, send mailers, and so on before an election to report their spending. Groups can disseminate plenty of information, selected and targeted, about candidates or about ballot measures leading up to an election, and as long as their materials do not clearly state support or opposition, like the magic words support or oppose, they don't have to report their spending. This is called dark money or gray money. If an individual or organization is spending money disseminating information about someone on the ballot during the election period, they are involved in campaigning, I believe. Otherwise, you'd wonder, why are they spending money for those mailers or those radio ads? So the solution in this bill is disclosure. It's one of the most basic forms of campaign finance regulation, and this bill aims to close a loophole. Currently, the term independent expenditures refers to expenditures made by a person for a communication in support of or opposition to a clearly identified candidate or measure. This bill expands the definition of an independent expenditure. It includes aggregate expenditures of $750 or more on communications that refer to a clearly identified candidate and are made within 30 days before a primary election or 60 days of a general election. This definition will cover expenditures on communications that don't directly advocate for or against, but which clearly refer to the candidate or measure. I'll give you an example. Imagine you're an organization trying to help a candidate who favors your social issue point of view. So you send out a mailer to your organization's members that doesn't say vote for so-and-so, but it points out that the candidate voted a certain way in the previous election or has done certain things that seem favorable to that social issue. And then you buy radio ads and some social media ads. The communication is referring to the candidate, the person on the ballot. It doesn't say vote for that person. And I think it should be considered a political communication made for political purposes. Right now, it just simply doesn't have to be reported. It's a big loophole in our law. If you don't use the magic words like elect or vote for, then you can engage in campaigning without reporting it. I just don't think that's what Oregonians have in mind. They want transparency. This bill does not prevent communication. It just requires reporting it. Over the past couple of years, I've worked with the Secretary of State's office, the Department of Justice, and various organizations to hear their concerns and then work with legislative counsel to craft a bill that accomplishes the goal of transparency and to address stakeholder concerns and fit within the Constitution and the law. Nonpartisan voter guides, commercial communications for businesses, and official publications produced or distributed by public employees on the job during working hours, such as the voter's pamphlet, would clearly be exempt from the reporting requirements. We have heard from some nonprofit organizations that they are worried about losing their 501c3 status. We think that's because they're concerned about how reporting expenditures on communications covered by the bill would make them political, perhaps in violation of tax-exempt status. But this kind of spending is already political. It's not the reporting requirement that causes a problem. It was the political activity itself. All organizations that are heavily engaged in advocacy should be on a level playing field. If an organization is involved in campaigning, they will then be playing by the same rules as everybody else. If engaging in a political activity is important enough to the organization, they could choose to create a separate advocacy wing, such as a 501c4, and maintain nonprofit status. And they can do that and still engage in up to 25% political activity. And it's not a difficult process to set up a C4, so I'm told. For reporting, an individual group could report spending to the candidate as an independent expenditure, sort of like an in-kind expenditure. We believe that could work. Or if they're involved in a substantial amount of political activity, they could create a political committee. All you have to do is go to the Secretary of State's website and fill out a couple of forms. This bill will reduce the amount of dark money spent anonymously in Oregon. It levels the playing field, since many organizations or committees already report their spending. Our civically engaged citizens deserve transparency, and they do want to know where money is coming from. I understand the tremendous effort that went into crafting this bill and writing it carefully, having been through many hours with legislative counsel going over the details. And I want to emphasize that this effort is not limiting free speech. It's about increasing transparency. I believe that in the court of public opinion, the public does want to know who's spending money. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
For the record, I am Senator Brian Boquist, District 12. I'll be much more, to the point and shorter. Unfortunately, at some point, I was voted no on something in the state Senate, and President Courtney assigned me to the backwoods and said, you are now on the task force for campaign finance reform. And I started at the beginning, and later on, Representative Rayfield and Representative Kinnemer joined me in that task with about a dozen other citizen individuals from the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the IPO, and all the rest across the board. And one of the things that they got frustrated about is the legislature not listening to what they had to say. And, you know, as trying to sit across the aisle with both Democrats and Republicans in the room, being legislators, I kind of came to the conclusion that it was the responsibility of all four legislators, both senators and representatives, to try and bring forth those issues that were before that task force. Some of them aren't great. Some of them are. I agree with this bill here. I think virtually every individual that was on that task force, from the Democrats to the Republicans to the Green to the IPO, and these gentlemen can attest to that, you know, wanted some sort of transparency on independent expenditures and some sort of width. I believe there are actually members from that task force sitting back here, and I'm sure they're going to testify on this bill. And what I would ask you, and the good representative to my left, you know, made mention of, you know, some possible amendments or discussions on that, and the vice chair and Representative Kinnemer both participated in these discussions in length and length and length. And so I would leave it in your good care to determine the best course of action and how to start down the road. My last and final comment that I would give warning to all of us, including myself, is that we are really good at talking about campaign finance reform in this building, and we are really bad about doing anything about it. And so I would hope that you do something. And with that, I would be happy to entertain questions for all of 30 seconds so I can go to my own committee.
Yes,
thank you. I will ask a very quick question, and thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure you guys will know. In a former life, I was involved with an organization that indeed would do mailings about whether it was voter guides. Sometimes it was voter guides, sometimes it was things, and you will often see these now in the newspaper approaching our federal folks, you know, call Senator Wyden and thank him for his vote on blah, and it just happens to be right before the election. But there, that is very clearly in federal law, as long as you do not say in the federal campaign law, vote for or against, that is allowable. So do you have any concern that we might get preempted or something, or is it that because this is state regs and we are merely limiting our own requirements that we've already established?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is referring to state law and state reporting requirements. I'm not concerned about it being different from the federal definition. This is just about reporting on spending in Oregon.
Representative Kinnemer.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, too, for bringing this bill forward. I think all of us have concerns about dark money, and we need to try a variety of approaches to figure out how to shed some light on it and make sure that it's transparent. So, thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much. Norm and Joe, do you want to come on up?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Norman Turrell. I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm also a member of the Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform, and I've been working on campaign finance issues for some 40 years, since the 1970s. And besides all that, I'm a retired computer software engineer. I want to emphasize that the League is not opposing this bill. I do have some comments, though, about it. The League of Women Voters of Oregon and nationally, the LWVUS, have supported disclosure of campaign finance of elections with their studies and advocacy positions since the 1970s. An independent expenditure is now defined in the ORS as an expenditure by a person for a communication in support or opposition to a clearly defined candidate or measure that is not made with the cooperation of a candidate or political committee. You'll recognize I've left out some phrases of that statute, but you get the idea. Section 1 of this bill would add another option to the definition of independent expenditures so that anyone expending more than $750 in aggregate and clearly referring to a candidate, ballot measure, or political party in periods directly before a primary or general election must file a statement of independent expenditures. However, one issue with this addition is that the $750 threshold is already in statute in the section that defines the actual independent expenditure report. I won't quote it, it's in my testimony. While the addition of a political party to the definition of, quote, clearly identified in section 110BB may be useful, we do not see the problem that it is trying to solve. Independent expenditure already has a perfectly good definition in statute. Later in section 210 of this bill would exclude from the definition of an expenditure and therefore from an independent expenditure any nonpartisan communications such as voters' guides during the defined periods before primary and general election. This section appears designed to exclude nonpartisan events like the League's candidates, debates, and forums, and nonpartisan publications like the League of Women Voters Guides. Our voters' guides are published in English, Spanish, easy to read, video, audio, and braille formats, and we have an online interactive format that you can find at Voter Resources online. The League very much appreciates the consideration given to us for our statewide services to voters. This section of the bill may be useful because such an exclusion has not previously been an explicit part of statute. Although such an exclusion has already been implied by subsection 6 of this section for some decades. Unfortunately, these definitions are complicated and undergird some of the most important parts of Oregon's public disclosure law. They have decades of application and interpretation behind them. The League is concerned that more complicated definitions may have unintended consequences. In fact, the League believes that, taken together, these changes are likely to be an unconstitutional infringement on free speech that the courts have already rejected. While something like HB 2505 and the bill we're going to hear next, 2584, may be useful now, if Oregon ever had contribution limits as recommended by the Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform in its proposed HJR 5, then new provisions of law to discourage dark money and independent expenditures that try to evade contribution limits would be even more important. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. We support House Bill 2505. I think we believe in transparent and open elections, and we believe that if you're going to spend a significant amount of money on an election, you should have to report it. We report all the money we spend on elections. Not all of you like what we spend, but we do. But it's pretty open. It's pretty easy to find it. If we do use an independent expenditure, we usually set up a PAC, and it's reported on the contribution expenditure forms for Secretary of State. I think to be respectful of other smaller organizations that might be stressed due to this bill, I think there's actually quite a few caveats in the bill, kind of protections for them. If they have an open and fair process and they allow information from both sides and they present it in a neutral way, this wouldn't apply to them. So I think that the transparency needs sort of outweigh the inconvenient needs of having to report. So I don't have a lot to say. Generally supportive, and we think it makes a lot of sense.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you. With that, I will close the public hearing on 2505 and open a public hearing on 2696.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2696 allows candidate for office and ballot measures in special districts to be included in state voters pamphlet if county does not print and distribute voters pamphlet for an election.
Right ahead.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name for the record is Caddy McEwen. I represent House District 9, Coos Beatty Yahats into Elmira, and I represent three community colleges. I'm here today on behalf of Southwestern Oregon Community College, which main campus is in my district. The legislature in the last session, in its generosity, provided some capital money for our number of our community colleges, an $8 million grant for them to do some capital improvements. With the guidance of Dr. Patty Scott, the president of Southwestern, they are moving forward with a project to utilize that money to build a health and sciences building in collaboration with a number of other entities in Coos and Douglas County. As they were preparing to go to ballot with a bond measure in support of this project, it came to light that community colleges who cover a number of counties in fairly large geographic areas are not allowed to appear in the voters pamphlet. And we found that to be kind of interesting. So working with the Secretary of State's office, we drafted a bill to try and rectify that. We feel it's very important that community colleges who do cover wide geographic areas be able to present to their voters information when they're bringing a bond measure. So the bill was drafted, and I've been working for the last couple of weeks with the Secretary of State's office on this bill. There will be an amendment coming. We need to tighten up some of the language right now. When community colleges are considered special districts, believe it or not. And when you open the door to special districts, it goes, as you can imagine, very broadly. So we're trying to find out if there's a way that we can narrow this down so that it gives the opportunity for community colleges to participate in making sure that their voters are well educated, but not open the door so broadly that we've created a problem for ourselves. I would like to introduce Dr. Patty Scott, who's the president of Southwestern Community College. But before I do, I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to congratulate Representative Barrett, who this past year was awarded with induction into the Hall of Fame at Southwestern Community College for his athletic prowess, among other things.
Are you from the area
of the world? I couldn't come without acknowledging the fact that he hit the front page of the paper, I believe, in Coos Bay this summer when he was in Coos Bay receiving an award that we thought was a delightful thing, and we appreciate you and your lovely wife coming to Coos Bay for a weekend to accept that.
Missed it.
I did. I was not in town, but I will turn things over to President Scott to explain.
And not only that, he took an electronics class that led to his discovery of his business, so that's another story.
We take credit for a lot of things in Coos Bay.
He's a famous alum, as in the power of community colleges. I'm the president at Southwestern Oregon Community College, for the record, Patty Scott. And as Representative McEwen said, we discovered this issue this fall, actually in September, when we were doing everything we needed to do to get materials ready to go out to the voters for a bond measure to raise the match money for our project. And one of the things that we wanted to do is be able to put our information out to the voters in the voters pamphlet, because as you all know, the people generally who read the voters pamphlet are well informed and they vote, and it's a very economical way to get the information out to the voters. And by statute, there's limited things that you can do once your board has decided to go out for a bond and how you campaign using state funds. So this we saw as an avenue to get the information out. And we discovered that because of the way the wording is with that school districts are allowed, but not special districts, which is the definition of a community college. So you may see, you know, bond measures like the Coos Bay School District will have a bond measure at the May election. They are a school district, so they're able to be in the voters pamphlet, but a community college, which is a special district, is not allowed. And the other complication with this is There's some issues between the metro area in definition of a service district and in rural areas. So in rural areas, many counties can't afford to produce their own voters' pamphlets, so they rely on the state pamphlet. So I'm a rural Oregon girl. I grew up in northeastern Oregon in Representative Barreto's district, so I fight hard to try to eliminate barriers that exist in the rural areas that don't affect the metro areas. And so this change would eliminate, one of those barriers to getting information out to the voters.
Any further record?
Questions about any?
It sounds like a simple problem. It's a little bit more complex than we thought. And so we are working with the Secretary of State's staff right now. They're doing some research for us on a path forward to make sure that we don't go so broad that we have a problem, but also allow our voters to understand what our community colleges are trying to do should they need to go out for a bond. So we will be bringing an amendment. We're working on it now, and we appreciate you hearing about our little problem today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Representative Holby. Thanks. I appreciate the bill. Looks like a pretty straightforward bill. I just have one question. I'm trying to clarify. If your county already issues its own voters pamphlet, would it still need to go into the state voter pamphlet?
They are county doesn't. And a lot of the rural counties don't.
They don't.
They do
but
not.
But in a county that does, what happens? That does have their own voter pamphlet?
I'm not an expert on this, but this community college covers three counties. So if you had, if all three counties produced their own voters pamphlet and the law would allow it, I'm assuming you could pay the fee for each county and be present in each of those voters pamphlets. But right now you're not allowed to because they are designated as a special district.
So follow up. So if I'm understanding that correctly, then if in fact you were in a county that did allow special districts, or they had their own voter pamphlet, or two or three of them all did have their own voter pamphlet, you wouldn't necessarily be in the state voter pamphlet. You would be in the county voter pamphlet.
Right. I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. As long as I also believe that your county has to have some ordinance passed to allow you to be in that.
Right.
If one
right.
is produced.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What three counties do you cover that are involved?
Western Douglas County, Coos County, and Curry County.
So all of the two and then part of huge Douglas County.
Right.
Just carrying on with that conversation mm-hmm. a bit, that's a big county for, I don't know, would that be included? Is there a separate Western Douglas County voters pamphlet?
I would, nobody from Douglas County here today. I can't answer that question.
Yeah. I don't know if any of the rural areas do produce a voters pamphlet.
Chair Williamson, Representative Kenemer, I think if you look at the geography that we're talking about, part of the problem is these are three very, very, very cash-strapped counties. And yep. so the cutbacks have occurred.
We don't log.
Yeah, and so voters' pamphlets are not produced by those counties for a number of reasons, but that's one of them.
Yeah, I understand. It's just my concern is Douglas is such a large county, you have to represent a small portion of that, so the expense of adding pages is probably pretty substantial is my
but
concern.
You pay to get into the voters pamphlet just like you pay to get into the state, as you all probably know that.
I think I'm familiar with it.
And so it shouldn't be an extra expense.
Yeah.
Chair Williamson, we do realize that this little simple issue is, they're never as simple as they seem, but really what we'd like to do is it at the end of the day is make sure that community colleges who are now considered for this purpose a special district maybe fall into a different category so that they could, if the logistics work out, have access to the voters pamphlet by not being determined that they're a special district for this purpose. I think that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you. Any further questions?
All right.
With that, yes, Representative Barreto.
Maybe you don't know this, but the counties, the money that goes into printing their own, do they get reimbursed at all from the state? for that?
I am not an expert on voters' pamphlets. I cannot answer that. But when we return, which I hope we do, we can bring a representative from the Secretary of State's office who can answer that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2696. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2584.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2584 identifies specific types of expenditures that are considered to be in coordination with candidates for purposes of determining if expenditure is considered to be an independent expenditure. It lowers threshold for required filing statements of independent expenditures to $250. It increases penalties from 10% to 40% of total amount of contribution or expenditure for failure to include required information in statements or certificates for incorrectly identifying expenditure as independent expenditure and for failing to timely file accurate statements for in-kind contributions. It requires person that makes independent expenditure of more than $250 in calendar year to maintain detailed accounts and to be current not later than the seventh calendar day after triggering required report. Account records must be kept for at least 2 years. Requires Secretary of State to adopt rules to conduct audits of statements of independent expenditures. Requires Secretary of State 4 times per year to randomly select for examination accounts of political committees. Examination is to determine committees' compliance and accuracy with required filing statements during the 3 months immediately preceding the review. Requires Secretary of State to adopt rules designated methodology for random selection of committees. It permits Secretary of State or Attorney General, upon reasonable suspicion of violation, to examine accounts of committees being investigated as a result, and permits Attorney General during investigation of election complaint to issue subpoena to compel production of information or documents. Provisions of this measure become operative January 1st of 2019. There is a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment directs Secretary of State to enhance searchability of independent expenditures in ORSTAR.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Dan Rayfield, House District 16. House Bill 2584 is really, there's a lot of different things in it that are really focused on increasing transparency and accountability in our campaign finance world. And so I think a perfect example of some of the failings of our current system would be Speaker Kotek's primary. In this bill, we had been looking at this, and then Speaker Kotek's primary came through, which really kind of, and this was a bill that the underlying bill we had passed in the short session. When Speaker Kotek's primary came, we had expenditures that were being spent. We didn't know where they were coming from, and we had, so there were transparency issues on an independent expenditure side, whether they were independent expenditures, and then when the Secretary of State's office asked actually to receive certain documents, the folks on the other side said no. And so there was a bunch of issues that kind of came to light, or I should say were emphasized by that race, which this bill is really focused on addressing. So the first component of this is basically proactive monitoring of compliance of our existing laws. And so what I want you to think about is kind of the IRS. We have tax audits that ensure that people are filing appropriately and actually following the laws. We would do the same thing for campaign committees. And so there's basically random audits that would periodically occur, where you would look at bank records with the filings that are done on ORSTAR. One of the things that we used to have when we had spot checks, we would actually look at the records that were filed and versus and ask for compliance with the documents supporting that information. That was, for the most part, actually very accurate information. What we don't have is the absence of filing. So in theory, any one of us could blow $20,000 through our account, spend the $20,000, and when the Secretary of State asks us, you know, did that occur, we can just say no. There is no actual monitoring on the back end. This would fix that through random audits. It would also give them the ability to conduct investigations if there was reasonable suspicion based upon a written complaint, where they could then request bank records where, right, and they actually can get an order of mandamus requiring a campaign entity to comply to give them the records. The other thing that it does is it increases penalties. And so the current penalty amount is 10% of an amount. This would increase it to 40%. an amount. And so the anecdotal information that I've gotten from treasurers that have been widely used by many different candidates is there have been rare occurrences where an individual may get a large check and doesn't want to file it timely. So if you think about it, you get a $5,000 check, you know that you really don't want people to know about that. So if you delay your filing, you know the maximum you're going to pay is $500. And you weigh the options. Is $500 worth not having a campaign hit where this $5,000 came from? And people have actually weighed that. Now, if you have a good treasurer that wants to follow the rules, they're going to say no. Absolutely not. You got to file that. And I think that's what happens in most cases, but there is a conflict or a conflict of interest within the system where the penalty needs to be a little bit steeper to kind of help us compel the right action that we're seeking. The other thing that this will do is it will change the way ORSTAR some of the ways that these things are researched. So on independent expenditures, and this would be the Dash 1 amendment, what we have right now is people will spend their own PAC monies on Secretary of State fines. So Secretary of State will issue fines, and people actually spend their own PAC money to pay that. What we want to do is create a line item actually on the summary page in ORSTAR that shows the amount of their PAC money that is being spent on the fines. The other thing that it would do, you can search independent expenditures on ORSTAR if you're an advanced user and you know how to find it. Most folks actually going on to ORSTAR don't know how to use it, and often I have to reteach myself over and over. What we want to do is create a more simple way to access that information on ORSTAR, so that way you actually have a small tab on the right-hand side that says independent expenditures. You could search by candidate, or you could search by entity and see everything that was being spent, again, increasing the transparency. The final portion really kind of cracks down on independent expenditures, increasing some more transparency. First, what we do is we specifically defined acts that would be considered coordinated activities. And so we have those definitions. So, for instance, one of those example would be if a candidate provides information to a group about the candidate's campaign needs and the group makes expenditures accordingly, that would be considered coordination under the rule. Right now, we have a broad rule. This really hones that in on some areas that need a little bit of clarification on what coordination of an independent expenditure is. Then we also lower the threshold for independent expenditures from $750 to $250. This will help us get at the Tina Kotek issue, but also in a lot of smaller races, whether it's city council or county commissioners, we see multiple people in the community that kind of band together to influence the outcome of an election, and this would capture that collective expenditures. Let's see here. The other thing that we do is instead of having 30 days to report an expenditure, we actually move that to 7 days. And then we require independent expenditure folks who are making independent expenditures to keep the information like our treasurers already have to do. So you keep the underlying data so that way you can research it a little bit later. So that is the bill in its entirety. It's quite long.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Norman Turrell. I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon, a member of the Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform. I'm really happy to see three members of the task force here today. And I've been working on campaign finance issues since the 1970s, and I'm a retired computer software engineer. The League of Women Voters of Oregon and nationally have supported disclosure of campaign financing of elections with their studies and advocacy positions since the 1970s. HB 2584 is an important proposal to help discourage dark money independent expenditures in Oregon elections. And by the way, I believe that independent expenditures, dark money, is probably a scourge on our campaign finance system, and should be opposed if possible as much as we can. This bill carefully defines situations where campaign expenditures are coordinated with a campaign and therefore are not independent expenditures and must be reported as independent contributions to a campaign, in-kind contributions to a campaign. HB 2584 further tightens when independent expenditures must be reported in ORSTAR and increases penalties for noncompliance. This bill then adds important tools for the Secretary of State and the Attorney General to use in investigations and audits of campaign committee accounts. These are complicated features of Oregon's public disclosure law with much detail. It is safe to say that there is no one way to implement these ideas, so we could have much discussion around each feature. As written, it is a good bill, and we urge the committee to pass it out. While all of HB 2584 is needed now, if Oregon had a contribution limits that are recommended by the Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform in its proposed HGR 5, then HB 2584 would be even more important as a method for Oregon to discourage dark money independent expenditures that try to evade the contribution limits. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rayfield, I guess I didn't follow the discussion about reporting of campaign fines from PAC funds. They would already be required. You've reduced the threshold, or I'm not sure. I didn't follow that.
So. Yeah, Chair Williamson, Representative Kenemer, currently the way that someone can pay a fine from the Secretary of State, you could go through the itemizations and expenditures, but it's not clearly going to define that it was actually spent on a fine with the Secretary of State. And so what we would do is within ORSTAR, and again, I am not the expert, what you would do is you would clearly define that this was related to a fine from make this expenditure tag it clearly related to a Secretary of State fine, and then that would then be a subcategory in your annual summary page on ORSTAR.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So currently someone could indicate that they paid X number of dollars to the Secretary of State, and there would be no explanation of it. So this would make it explicit that it was payment of a fine.
Chair Williamson, Representative Kenemer, under the current system, yeah, you're correct. There's, depending on the way that it's logged, it's not going to be specifically relatable to a fine. Of course, you know, if you're running against somebody, you can get their campaign records and find that information out, but it's not going to be clearly defined what it's being paid towards. This would just really really shed some light on this issue so that way we can, and you know, and for instance, if you're a part of an organization, a professional organization, no matter what it is, and you're contributing $100 a month to this organization because you believe in their values and what's going forward, and you know, as a contributor to this organization, you find out that each year they're spending $5,000 of your contributed money towards Secretary of State fines, I'd like to know that because it tells me something about how they're managing their funds. And I'm not saying that there any one organization does that, but that's information that's valuable, you know, as whether people are actually following the system. I also think for candidates, you know, it's something you don't want to have on your summary page. Now, the one thing that could happen is a candidate could, in theory, pay the fines out of their own personal money, and that wouldn't be logged on ORSTAR. Or a treasurer could pay the money out of their own personal funds as well. This would only relate to money that was being paid with PAC dollars. And the other thing I would note is there's some things in this, and that's the dash one, there's some things in this that will require a fiscal, depending on, you know, obviously we are in the times that we are with our budget. It may make sense to excise the components of this bill that would require the fiscal and pass the policy components that won't have the fiscal on it, such as the fines and the definitions and the thresholds for independent expenditures.
Representative McLean.
Representative Rayfield, I noticed in Section 3 of this proposed bill, it moves from 10% to 40% for a fine for a late filing of a campaign expenditure donation. This applies to independent expenditures as well as all expenditures, correct?
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, yes.
May I follow up? You alluded to in your testimony anecdotal evidence that somebody had told, or you had either heard or somebody had told you, or you had made a calculation of reporting a donation with the fine, meaning that someone had decided to take the fine and report late because they didn't want a political opponent to know about it. Is that a fair characterization?
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, I was told by a treasurer that a one time, and this is something that kind of illustrated a conflict of interest, that at one point a candidate in the past, before I had considered ever running for office, a candidate in the past had received a larger check, and that as a result was weighing the decision whether to ignore the current campaign laws and file it at a later date and just take the penalty and move forward. The treasurer who was operating said, absolutely not. I'm your treasurer. We're filing this timely.
May I follow up? Do you have any other evidence of intentional evasion of campaign reporting laws that would justify increasing by 400% the fine?
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, I can't impute negative motives on any specific individual, and I don't think that that would be appropriate. What I can say is that there are numerous fines that do occur at the Secretary of State's office. And one of the deterrents for these type of things would be increasing the penalties under these circumstances. Additionally, what I can say with absolute certainty is that there is a conflict an inherent incentive with a low penalty not to comply with the laws, as there are other political pressures. And given the fact that there are these outstanding political pressures inherent within the system, the higher penalties will encourage compliance with our current laws.
May I follow up? I'll confess that what you've articulated, at least what I've interpreted, and perhaps we should talk more about it, yeah, is a theoretical belief as opposed to evidence-based, and a substantial increase like 400% for a fine based upon a theoretical belief is a significant request of the committee, which you were the vice chair of, and it creates skepticism in me. One of the things, of course, we don't want to do is have solutions in search of problems. And I just wonder if this section here might need some review to determine whether it really does have any evidence to connect to, as you said, an intent. Because if it did, the question is why not 50 or 60 or 120%? But based on the testimony I'm hearing, I'm just not compelled to think that we need to raise this by 400% to achieve the behavior when there's no evidence of an intentional evasion. Someone's instance of actual fine is not, to me, proof of intentional evasion. And if the disclosure in compliance, in the sense of transparency is our goal, I think we would want to have some connection to intent. This is a substantial increase, that is a bit unsettling given the fact that it goes beyond the in-kind, which this I thought this was about, but obviously you're talking about all donations. I would be open to hearing if you have any evidence, or if the treasurer, or if the other treasurers would disclose without being disclosing their clients, would tell us that if it's more than just a one-off, because it does seem that prudence would we dictate that we not change the system so significantly when we don't know for sure that it will have any effect.
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, certainly appreciate and respect your philosophical difference on this. I look at this as a system that inherently has conflicts and incentives not to follow the law. And what we do know is, I mean, we have bills right now when we look at distracted driving about increasing the penalties and the data that's, you know, that moves along with that, right? This is a very analogous type situation in some respects. And also really kind of keeping in mind that there are a lot of other pressures in the system for folks, maybe not necessarily to follow something, which is part of the reason that we having the auditing in there, which I think is also very important. If auditing wasn't important, we wouldn't be doing it with our tax returns, right? So these are type of things that, you know, I just look at in this bill, and we just may philosophically disagree on that, but I certainly respect your opinion.
Yeah, Philip. I'm not sure I know what you mean by philosophical differences. Do you mean the difference between evidence-based for decisions in non-evidence-based? I mean, you referred to the texting, but I think that would actually illustrate my point. When you actually have statistical evidence or more than an occurrence or you actually have documented evidence that people are not getting off their cell phones while they're driving, then it may merit changing the law. But I guess that's what I'm asking here. Do you have any of that evidence? And I don't see it. Is that what you mean by philosophical difference?
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, why don't we just take a step back and let's pretend I didn't use the word philosophical difference. And really, I think I have an opinion. I have and based upon the information that has been presented to me, based upon the inherent pressures within the system and the low results, that this will achieve the outcome that we're looking to have in terms of compliance. What I can say from a personal standpoint, and I think probably most of us can say the same thing, is that as penalties were to increase from a very nominal amount to something substantial, that heightens the need to comply with various deadlines in a timely fashion or in a very strict fashion. Just like in the distracted driving setting, when the fines increase and the pain becomes significant enough, then people start judging their behavior in a different way. And that is what the intent of the bill is. And if we're looking for additional concrete evidence, I think we could probably refer to the Secretary of State's office and look at basically the list of all the violations. I think that would be a start to at least start to look at that data.
Could I follow up? I realize that simple logic dictates that in the absence of deterrence, the prescribed behavior would increase. But it wasn't that long ago that these fines were more, and we lowered them to 10%. We, as in the proverbial we legislature, over time. My understanding, and I don't have the details of when we did it, but it has been debated. And so what I'm concerned about, and I'm concerned to, and why I raise this, is because if we start making the decision based upon the premise that more deterrence will equal better behavior without any evidence that it does, then it's just simply a race to deterrence. Why not 100%? Why not a $10,000 fine for every $1 that's not reported? I mean, at a certain point, we all agree it's silly. But it becomes politically expedient to be the champion of the deterrent bill And so there becomes this one-upmanship, and we see it starting to happen in other areas. I'm just saying in this, where, you know, before we head down this road and start one-upping each other, well, for, you say 40%, I say 50. I'm tougher on politicians than you. And instead of heading down this road, shouldn't we be looking to say, is 10% really not working? Because they did, if I recall, and my, you know, memory may be off here, I haven't done that, you know, computer research on it. But if I recall, we lowered it to 10% a while back. And so I'm just saying, before we head it back up, we should have some base to do it. I'm raising it. I don't know if you've done a lot of research. I mean, frankly, think a lot about these things, and I just thought you might have. But I do think the committee as a whole should be reticent to start racing to one-up each other on who's tougher on politicians until we actually know that 10% isn't working.
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, I think you were, and I are the only ones that call each other politicians. Everybody else like to call us elected officials. It's a lot more polite, right?
No, I looked at officials. My apologies.
No, I have no problem using the word politician. I know that I wouldn't have voted for decreasing the fines at the very beginning. My philosophy has been, if you violate the rule, you violated the rule, you got to pay the penalty. And I certainly appreciate the dynamic of not wanting a political game of just penalizing for no purpose. I think that isn't what this is really aimed at. The true intent of this is the penalties, in my humble opinion, are too low based upon some of the anecdotal information and some of the conversations that I've had that we can certainly talk with offline. What I want to see is just more compliance with the law, and I think the penalties right now are too low to see the compliance that, to create the incentives for compliance the way that I would like them to be personally. But I also certainly respect your position that you don't want to see, you know, people just, you know, putting one-upping on a bill just to make a point, right? I don't think that serves any position at all. Just the conversations that I've been in just have led me to believe that this is a good direction to go. And again, right, if we don't violate the law, we're not going to have a penalty assessed against us. It's really only for the folks that aren't following the rules.
Two lawyers who don't want to be on the Judiciary Committee. This sure feels like a judiciary hearing.
I think we both would love to be on it, actually, but for some reason they never let us on. I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't understand. We'd be great.
Representative Kenema.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would welcome you both.
I wonder if it would be fair to ask staff to find out the history on this amount.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to know what the history is. I don't recall it.
Representative Kenemer, I am looking that up as we speak,
Aaron,
and I will get back
it
to you,
yes.
If I can't get it before the end of the hearing.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Thank you, guys. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2584. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2351.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2351 requires individual political committee or petition committee that receives requests for information or documentation from the Secretary of State, Attorney General, or filing officer pursuant to campaign finance investigation to produce the information within 30 calendar days request, permits use of campaign monies in connection with most legal proceedings relating to election law, establishes civil penalty of $150 for circumstances where a person signs ballot belonging to different elector, but Secretary of State or Attorney General determines that improper signature was not made with the intent to commit fraud, establishes civil penalty of up to 10% of campaign monies improperly converted to personal use in circumstances where conversion is accurately reported on contribution statements of expenditures.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the Deputy Director for the Secretary of State Elections Division. The goals for House Bill 2351 is to provide a deadline for persons to respond to requests from our office, provide clarity for what committees may use campaign funds for, and to provide a more reasonable penalty for committees that disclose a personal use transaction timely and then amend that same transaction after the due date. However, after further review of the bill, the Secretary would like to provide some amendments to this bill. Section 1 is regarding to ORS 26345 regarding investigations provided by our office. It adds a 30-day deadline for a person to respond to a request from our office for further information from the service date of the letter. Currently, there is no deadline for a person to respond to inquiries our office sends to them. This oftentimes results in no response received from our office. Our office is then unable to move forward with the investigation and must close the case because of insufficient evidence. The Secretary would also like to amend by adding a 90-day period prior to a primary or general election to respond to 30 days after the election. We don't want to cause any undue harm to campaigns. They're in the heat of the campaign. We may so we'd like to say that they have to respond to those within 30 days after the election during the period between the 90 days before a primary or general election. So we would also like to delete individuals and replace the individual wording with persons as defined in ORS 260005. The requirement to comply with the request for information is limited to individuals, political, and petition committees. As written, this would exempt corporations, limited liability company, labor organizations, associations, firms, partnerships, joint stock companies, club organizations, or other combination of individuals having collective capacity. We recommend deleting after receiving the request to the request from the service date of the letter. So we would provide a service date at the end of the letter that provides that they have to respond within 30 days from that date. Section 2 amends 26407. This statute is about the use of campaign funds for personal use to allow monies received as campaign contributions to be used for legal proceedings brought under Chapter 246 through 260. We would like to replace the portion ORS Chapters 246 to 260 with related to campaign activities of the committee, so a candidate committee, a political committee, or a petition committee. Oftentimes, there are issues that arise for campaigns that are outside of Chapters 246 through 260. However, they are related to the campaign. So we would like to allow for those legal fees for those activities. Section 3, we would like to just delete that section. We're going to work closely with the Attorney General's office to try to come up with a better solution. Section 4 amends 26995 to impose a more reasonable penalty for violations of 26407 if the campaign activity is timely disclosed. We want to encourage disclosure in the spirit of transparency. So I can give you an example of that. So current law, if Committee A makes an expenditure to purchase an airline ticket to Hawaii for $1,500, it's personal use. They took it out of their campaign without realizing they couldn't pay for it out of the campaign. So the committee files a $1,500 transaction in Orstar after the due date. The penalty for the violation current law would be $2,500. So it's $1,500, that's the amount the expenditure was, plus $1,000. So that would be $2,500. If we amend it under this bill, so the committee files the $1,500 expenditure in Orstar, the penalty would be $1,150. So 10% of the $1,500 plus the $1,000 penalty. It seems we want to be a little more fair about these kind of issues. They're reporting it, they're being transparent, and then it could be quite a large fine for those individuals. If the committee has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Committee members, we will be getting these amendments and they'll be up on OLIS. Aaron will get them so we have them in front of us, but we don't have them in front of us right now. Yes, Representative Holby.
Maybe an unrelated question. Does When a someone pays the Secretary of State's office for, say, a voter pamphlet statement or something, $750, and they pay with a credit card, does the Secretary of State issue a like an e-receipt or any sort of paperwork on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, if it's about a civil penalty for a campaign finance penalty, we would submit a letter, a letter saying that we received the payment.
At the penalty stage? No, I'm just talking when the payment's made.
When the payment's made. So the payment is made through our business services division, and I'm not...
Website, yeah.
Yes. So I don't believe that there is a receipt for that, no.
Okay. I just mentioned that because if Representative Rayfield is going to raise the fees, it seems like the voter pamphlet statement's due in February when we're in session, and you don't get a receipt, so really the first time I see receipts when I look at my credit card statement, which is past the time to get a penalty, so if I would have had that receipt, I might have been able to, you know, make that payment more timely because I forgot that I didn't enter it in. Report the payment. Right, report the payment. Yeah, it's just a timing issue when you're in session and trying to do that without a receipt because you're supposed to have receipts for all your expenditures. And this is one receipt that I never seem to have one expenditure I never get a receipt for. So anyway, I just want to get that cleared up before Representative Rayfield raises my penalties.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don't we, though, get a receipt that you have they've received the filing, right? So, like, you do get an acknowledgement that we received your statement, yeah, that...
No receipt for payment.
Well,
but you can't file without receipt.
I guess
receipt
not
of
to
payment.
Argue with my buddy here, but, like, it's implicit, I think, right? Because you have to pay that filing fee in order to have your statement processed. You do it at the same time. I mean, granted, I only do it twice every 2 years, and I panic about it every single time I do it because I know how important that statement is and that expenditure is, and so it's like I make somebody else watch me do it so it's done right. But I think that's like the receipt, right? You get a confirming email that somebody got it.
I filed it, yeah.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say how privileged I am to serve on a committee with someone like Representative Holvey, who is extremely concerned about making sure he's timely filing all of his expenditures. I would note for Representative Holvey, there is for things that you do not receive receipts for in a timely manner, there's an accounts receivable component on ORSTAR, which you then have to estimate the fair market value of the services that you have purchased put it on there. You can see the head shaking right there. There is no escaping your expenditures if you're following the rules, Representative Holvey.
Else want to confess
your treasurer is just taking care of all this for you, Paul. That's why you're not paying any
Thank
attention.
Thank you very much.
It was hyped.
All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2351 before somebody gets themselves in trouble on the record. Is there anything else? And with that, we are adjourned.
Good job.
And with that, we are adjourned.